Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Mac, and you are hopefully listening to Mac's Musings. This is my third attempt at tonight's show. Hopefully it will work, and I am working on calling my guest, and I don't mean to tell you my business, but I have arthritis, so it's kind of hard for me to work on these numbers here. So it's going to take me just a minute. Bear with me. And hopefully in a minute, we will be talking to Will DeVos. So the dial is going in. And hopefully it works. I hear it ringing. And hopefully we will be talking to him in just a minute.
Hey now.
Hello, Will. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you perfectly.
Okay, good. So it actually worked a second time. Oh, I hope I didn't jinx myself. So actually what I'm going to do, since we had, granted the people listening don't know this, but we had a little trouble and we restarted the show. So what I'm going to have you do is go over what we talked about. Well, actually what you talked about with the macabre medicine, and basically
sure.
go over everything,
sure.
what you said. And while you're doing that, I am going to share the link to Facebook, okay?
Perfect.
And then you can also do that if you get a second. Okay, go
cool.
ahead.
So one thing that we were just talking about was macabre medicine, and macabre medicine was one of the first movies I ever did. It was a movie that was a student film. I went to Sussex Technical High School in Georgetown, Delaware. It's a great little high school. And I took a media broadcasting, which, you know, was the closest thing you could get to film. And at the end of your 4 years there in your senior year, you have to create something that showcases that everything that you've learned throughout the 4 years of you going to high school, in media broadcasting. So, you had to write a big paper, 10-page paper, all this stuff. So I made something, called Macabre Medicine. It was a short film that was 30 minutes long. And, you know, most people back then were doing music videos and you know, newscasts or things on their own and using that. And I wanted to do something completely different. So I made this macabre medicine movie with no money, trying to show how special effects, you know, affect people, because, you know, I'm a big gore hound. I love horror films, but, you know, special effects, they're not only there to make you cringe, they can make you cry. They can definitely tug on your heartstrings, make you laugh. You know, all those Eddie Murphy movies where he's disguised. So, I made a film that became something way bigger than what I ever anticipated. It went from a 30-minute film to a hour and a half feature, and there is an uncut 3-hour version of this film out there, thanks to Sean C. Phillips. Sean C. Phillips is an actor who kind of was like, hey, look, this is a good movie. You should make this into a feature film. Well, halfway through the movie, nobody really liked the script. It was a little too dark for some people. We really tried to make a serious, dark horror film, me, Ben Bostaph, Adam Clifton, Josh Lynch. So we kind of changed it and made it like a horror comedy, more like a spoof of the early exploitation films from the 60s and 70s. And on this movie, I did almost everything. You know, Adam Clifton did the score, beautiful score. Ben Bostaph helped me shoot some stuff. So did Josh Lynch. You know, we all kind of collaborated. It was mostly like, we threw the script out. It was mostly an ad lib thing. But if you watch the movie, if you ever get a chance to, it's not been distributed yet. We're talking to some people. I don't want to say who, but we're trying to get it distributed. If you watch the movie, you can see certain scenes of what was part of a serious horror film as opposed to the comedic parts. And this film was kind of cursed. We went through a lot of stuff with it, but, you know, it finally got done. It's not the greatest, but it's not the worst. It's definitely for film fans and film lovers. It's a movie that, you know, college kids should get drunk and watch and make fun of. That's kind of the purpose of it. But that was the first movie I ever made.
Actually, it sounds interesting to me. I like those school projects. Some of them aren't so good, but, you know, some of them are actually a lot better than stuff you see on the big screen with people that have millions and millions of dollars. So if it's enjoyable and fun to watch, that's all most people care about. And you were talking before about, I'm sorry, if you were done talking, were you done talking?
I was just going to add on to that, you know, it was very much a labor of love. It was like a movie that I drain my already dwindling savings account when I was in, you know, out of high school into college, and I really believed in this thing. And then, like, it was during a time where we were shooting on mini DV, like consumer cam. We had no money. We had no money at all. And it was a time when we were shooting on mini DV. And when I say mini DV, people assume like an HVX or DVX 100 or something like that. No, we were shooting on the crappiest low budget, you know, Walmart special cameras that we could get a hold of. And luckily we had a couple of friends of mine, like Matt Oaken and even Josh Lynch and Ben. We were doing whatever we can because we were going through cameras like hotcakes. Cameras were breaking left and right. And, you know, we had to borrow, rent. Yeah. And this movie was, like I say, was self-financed by me. Like, you know, this was a school project. I figured in my area, I was going around looking for investors, and we weren't looking for a lot of money. We were just looking for some money. And nobody really wanted to finance a horror film, so I had to really kind of work extra shifts and dig out of my pocket. And even to this day, you know, even though the movie's been done for a couple of years now, I'm still spending money on it because I'm trying to get it, you know, distributed properly. But all in all, like I said, I think I mentioned before, it was like an early film school. I learned what to do, what not to do. It was a very much an experimental phase for my filmmaking, and like I said, I learned so much. I learned how to shoot, how to edit with this thing, and you know, how to not cross the 180, you know, crossing the line, all that kind of stuff. And you know, this is stuff I learned even more in film school, but this was my foray into it, and it was kind of a exciting and thrilling, but you know, a movie like this was acceptable back in 2009. They were accepting movies like this through Dimension Extreme and stuff like that. When we got done in about 2013, it took forever to edit it. Nobody wanted it. It was kind of like, oh, this is crap. I don't want this movie. It's a piece of junk and blah, 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 blah. I don't know. Can I curse on this program? I don't want to.
It's PG-13, so you can curse to a certain extent.
Okay. All right. Pretty much what we were told by many people was it's good, but it's shit. You know, that was what it was. It's fun. But another thing is people didn't, at least the distributors didn't think that, you know, people would like it because it very much is a grindhouse movie. We were going after, like, we had all went out and saw the Quentin Tarantino, Robert Rodriguez film Grindhouse. And I got inspired and everybody else. It was one of the most fun times I've had in a theater ever. And I was like, I want to create something like that. I want to create something that's gooey and funny and goofy and cheesy. And we set out to do that. And it was, like I said at first, the script was super serious. It was a super serious horror film, but had some dark humor, like pitch black dark humor. And after a few days of shooting, it became something a lot different and more comedic and more fun. So I'm happy with it. It was definitely an experience. It's definitely an experiment. But I have some great fond memories, and I learned a lot from it. And I hope to show it soon. I don't know if there's any interest in it anymore, but it was definitely a fun movie. And if you're into the early 60s and 70s exploitation films and all the mistakes, like, we actually worked hard to make mistakes on this movie. Like, we, you know, continuity be damned. We really did try hard to make this movie just really reflect what these cheap exploitation films were that you would see in a grindhouse on 42nd Street. So...
Well, you know, it sounds like you had fun and you learned a lot, which actually you said you did. So really, that's the most important thing, especially since it was a school project. But sometimes those school projects turn out being really, really good. I've seen quite a few of those that did. I hope you're able to get funding for it, because I wouldn't mind seeing it, to tell you the truth.
I mean, once we get it distributed, I think everything will work out. Like I said, we have a few people who were interested in it, and then, like, too much time had passed, because I'm a perfectionist, and I don't want to just give you guys, like, here's the thing. I don't know if you – are you a big movie fan, Mac? Are you a big buff of movies?
Yeah. I laugh because I know you don't know me, but the people that know me, they're like, yeah, that's funny that he's asking that, but I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yes, I am.
So one thing when I was making Macabre Medicine, the thing that I liked about movies in general was, you know, you as a kid, if you didn't go to film school or you didn't have any money, you could learn about movies by watching DVDs. And DVDs had, like, these special features. And I thought that was, like, that's kind of a lost art now because – and there's no excuse for it. It ticks me off that these new movies come out and they only have the movie on it, because Blu-rays can really hold – you know, especially these 4K Blu-rays, they can really hold a lot of information. And
Right. There's
no special features to be seen. There's not even a making of behind it. You have to wait until like Screen Factory or somebody, you know, down the line releases it and makes these things, you know, Michael Felcher does a documentary on it for it. You know, there's no excuse for it. So when I was doing Macabre Medicine, not only did we do a movie, but we did a behind the scenes making of. We have some deleted scenes because, like I said, the original cut of that movie was 3 hours long. Now, we had to cut it down, obviously, for the mainstream audience, but there's a lot of inside jokes in there for people who know cinema and like cheesy horror that we just threw in there. It was just a beautiful thing. And, you know, some people got it. Some people – here's a funny story. I'm jumping around. I mean, you know what? I'm going to finish this thought. My ADHD can wait a second. The movie, like I was saying about the DVD – stuff, you could learn stuff. So that's what I wanted to do with this movie. So it took longer for us to get that material. And by the time we had it almost all done and packaged, nobody wanted it. They were just like, you know, the movie doesn't look good. It's not in HD. We shot it in SD and then converted it to HD. We actually made it look like 35 or, you know, even 16 millimeter film. We added some grain to it. We hand laid scratches to make it look older. Josh Lynch colored it. Ben did some coloring and some editing stuff to it. We all kind of pitched in. And like I said, Adam Clifton, who was one of the best composers I've ever worked with. In fact, he's the only composer I've ever worked with. You know, he's that good. He's excellent. Any indie filmmakers listening, you got to hire this guy, Adam Clifton. He's good, but he's not cheap. But we had the soundtrack and everything. Nobody wanted it. Nobody liked it. So we had to literally look around for people. And unfortunately, you know, I spent close to $20,000 on this movie over the period of, you know, even today, 10 years. 10, 12 years, we're not going to get a dime out of it, which sucks. Cause I really wanted to recoup some of that money and make another one. Now everything I do is literally bare bones, low budget, no budget, independent, you know, movies, shorts and stuff like that. But you understand what I'm saying about like DVD
yes,
not
I
having
do.
Special features anymore. Yeah. Which
yes,
is a shame
do, because
I, you know,
go ahead.
Ahead.
Oh, all I was going to say was that sometimes the special features are the best part of the movie. So I do understand what you're talking about. So go ahead with your thought there.
You know, it's like I would watch there was an Anchor Bay release of The Day of the Dead, George A. Romero. And I watched that thing religiously because it had behind the scenes footage that Tom Savini shot, you know, during the making of the movie, the special effects. So I was learning how they did special effects and, you know, this is before I went to his school, but, there was a lot of amazing things that you could do with no money just by watching that, you know, you didn't have to really research it. Back when we made this movie, for the folks at home listening, all three of you guys, I really appreciate it. Thank you. YouTube was in its infancy almost. It was like, you know, pretty much there was only bloggers and some indie filmmakers on there. There was a show called Indie Mogul, but like I liked it, but I didn't like it because it was like they never really told you 100% how to make the item or what materials you'll need. They were just kind of like, hey, get some liquid latex and nose putty and all this miscellaneous stuff you might have laying around. They never really described what it is. And they pretty much their whole thing was, we're going to teach you how to do backyard effects. Now, a lot of it was cool, but a lot of it, like I just didn't know how to build it. So I would take the premise and try to do it my way. And try to improve upon it with whatever I had. And, you know, we got some interesting things, but like there was no, this is how you shoot a film or this is some film facts. It was very basic. And, you know, I was a young kid. I was, you know, stupid, had ADHD. I didn't know that you could go to a library and try to find books. And if we did, it wasn't on digital video. It was mostly on film. And, you know, I couldn't afford to shoot on film. I was shooting on VHS tapes before that, high eight and, you know, I think I have an 8mm camera. I shot on it as a kid, but we never really edited. You know, it was impossible around here, at least. The film is not a big thing in Delaware. So we shot digitally on mini DV. And that was that's a thing of the past. Everybody thought that would last a while. And now we're all shooting on SD cards. But, YouTube, you couldn't go on YouTube and look up certain tutorials. I mean, and if you did, it was very basic and they didn't really explain to you how things work. That stuff didn't kick in until like 2013, 2012. That's when all the here, sign up and get a tutorial on how to edit on Premiere. So that's a thing that I think a lot of people didn't really understand when we were making this movie.
Well, special features, I sometimes enjoy those a lot more than the movie. Like, even a good movie, like The Abyss. Have you ever seen it?
I've never seen The Abyss.
Yeah, you're going to have to watch it. It's a good movie. It's won awards, and you'll see why when you watch it. It's about aliens that are living underwater, and we are, like, visiting with them. I don't want to tell you too much about it because this is supposed to be about you, so I'm just giving you a rough idea of what it's about. And it's got really well-known people in it. And there's one part, and it is so cool, where this little piece of, not little, this great big piece of water comes up, and it looks like almost like a snake, and it comes up to the guy's face, and then it turns into his face. It mimics his face because they're trying to communicate with the humans. But at that time, the humans don't even realize that there's aliens. They don't know what's going on. And it won't ruin it for you to know that, because that's even been talked about for a long time. But my reason for bringing it up is because in the extra stuff that came with the movie, there was actually more of that than there was of the movie. There was like 6 hours of special features. And they showed how they did all those different effects. And I just watched that going, wow. Wow. through the whole thing, because you're looking at that going, how could they have done that? And especially in the 80s, because that was before the big digital boom. And as you're watching it, you're thinking, how could they have done that? And then they show how they did it. And it's like, wow, you know, that's interesting. And then one other one I just want to say real quick, just to show you that I know what you're talking about. There's this really good movie, and it's an indie movie, and this woman is hitting this guy with this great big, like, baseball bat size thing, and it's got like nails and stuff in it, and she is whacking him on the head, and it looks so real. And for not having any money, I was thinking, man, I wonder how they did that. And they had special features, and they showed it. They had the guy's head next to this post. And so she was actually hitting the post, but they had done it so well that you could not tell, because when she did the hitting, she didn't hold back. She really was giving it all that she could give it. Because you know how sometimes you can tell that they're like holding back a little bit? And she wasn't holding back at all. So I was thinking, man, I wonder if he got hit in the head a few times. But no, he didn't, because they were good enough, and it came out looking great. So I'm sorry to take up some of your time with that, but I just kind of wanted you to know that I really know what you're talking about. So you can go ahead with whatever thought that it was that you had just a minute ago, if you remember. Sorry.
No, you're fine. We're just here BSing about films. That's all this is about right now. You know. But no, we wanted to package this thing up to be, you know, also, I just want to say for the folks at home, there is a delay, so that's overlapping a little bit. But no, we really wanted to package this thing up with how to make your own blood, how to do a gory effect, how to make your own beating heart, how to do, you know, that way there's more value to the DVD or the Blu-ray when all is said and done, you know. But unfortunately, I guess today while we're trying to talk distribution with people, nobody's really interested in that stuff anymore. It's all streaming. Nobody wants a physical copy. I still believe and love physical copies, but nobody else does. It's just more convenient to pay $14 a month or $15 a month for Netflix or Hulu, and you know, that you kind of lose all that stuff, which sucks. It really does, because I love watching the behind the scenes. I love watching or listening to the DVD commentaries. I mean, you know, that's a lot of cool stuff, and you know.
Well, it's more than just us, and when I say us, I mean me and people my age, us old fogies. It's more than just us that like the physical, because, well, you do too, and you're half my age. A lot of kids like to have physical things more than they do digital. So it's actually dwindling a little bit, but not as much as people think. Because one of the great things about having a physical copy, as you know, is you can get it autographed. you can't get a digital copy autographed. And if
that's
you
true.
Do, it's not an actual real autograph. It's just something that they said, well, put my name on this, and then it goes on there. It's not like they took the time to actually write it. And then some of the people, you know, send little notes depending on who they are. And it's great. It's like if you go to cons, you know, conventions, and most people are wanting physical things, because why would you want something digital? You're going to go through the trouble of going to this convention, maybe standing in line for an hour or longer waiting to see this person. And then they're just going to tell you, well, go to my website and look at my digital copy. Well, you know, I'd be pretty pissed if that happened. I don't know about you, but I would.
It's funny because I've been, a couple of these conventions have reached out, well, like maybe one or two have reached out about me coming up. And I'm like, why do you want me to speak or do, I'm a nobody. And now that I've got this talk show I'm doing, you know, out of my living room, it's kind of like, you know, people want my autograph. They're like, oh, we want it just in case you become famous. And I'm like, no, I'm nobody. What, get, you know who needs to sign autographs? The people who are known, like I just got an autograph from Andrew Devoff. Like, that guy was the Wishmaster. Like, that dude's freaking awesome. You know, get his autograph. Wait till I become somebody. I'm still a nobody. So, you know, the fact that, you know, and a lot of them are my friends or like, oh, you know, I've known you for 20 years. You know, let me get your autograph picture. And I don't mind it. If anybody listening, all three of you, want an autograph picture, I will give you one. And you can hang it on your mantle or throw it in the trash or whatever. But, yeah, I just, you know, it amazes me that even though, like, Macabre Medicine never came out, there was a guy who wanted me to come and talk about it. And, you know, to me, it's a great thing to talk about it because it's, like, the only people who would learn anything from it or have an interest is filmmakers, young filmmakers. And that's one of the things I want
right.
to do. I mean, let me tell you something. I just met this great young filmmaker. His name is Braden DeMorse Purdy. If you ever need to get somebody on a show, you need this kid. This kid's freaking phenomenal. He did a movie, I think it's called like Out of the Forest or Out of the Woods. But man, like I saw the trailer and I was like, man, I'm blown away by this thing. And this kid's going to be somebody. So you might want to get him on your show eventually.
Well, we're friends on Facebook. So if you send me his like Facebook link or just like, you know, send me his name with whatever his profile picture is, then I'll be able to find him on the search engine. And I'll shoot him a private message and see if he's interested. If he's interested, I'd be more than happy to have him on the show.
Oh yeah, I know a bunch of people. There's a lot of people I know who would definitely would love to be talking. There's a guy right here. He's making fun of me on my Facebook. His name is Darren Luang. I think Luang. He says you can't believe that I haven't seen The Abyss and called me a youngster. So, but he does stunts and stuff for movies overseas. He did a couple things, and we worked on a movie together, a movie that never came out called The Perils of Posting, but he's a great guy as well. So I know a couple people, if you want to interview them, they're really good. They're bigger stars than I am.
Well, like a lot of big name stars have said, everybody is a nobody until they're somebody.
Yeah, it's true.
There you are. So you never know. One of these days, and it may be sooner than you think, you may be a household name. It's happened to people before, and it's happened to people again. So
I'm just happy to be somebody at the local Wendy's. That's all I really care about. I go up there, they know my order, they say, hey, it's you. And I'm happy with that. That's the extent of my fame. I'm pretty good with that.
Well, I know you would like maybe a little more fame than that. So I don't want to, like, cut you off if you're not done talking about top medicine. But if you are, we can talk about a few other things because we're almost halfway through the show, which, you know, there's nothing wrong with that because I want you to talk about whatever you want to talk about. But if you want to talk about Macabre Medicine some more, we can do that. If not, I can, like, guide us into talking about something else.
Yeah, let's talk about something else. I mean, that movie is what it is. Let's move on to something better.
Okay. Well, now, I know that you played yourself in some documentary. And But that was just like your voice, right? In Romeo Must Hang, because I've actually heard of that movie.
Yeah, no, that was a thing. My film school teacher, I went to the Factory Digital Filmmaking Program, which is now the George A. Romero Filmmaking Program. My teacher, Bob Tennell, was like, hey, you've got a decent voice. Come do this thing. And he was always out. He was looking after my back because he knew I wanted to be an actor. So he would always give me these roles. And, you know, he hasn't given me any recently, hint, hint, wink, wink. But, yeah, I voiced the killer. It was a quick scene, and Bob and this other guy, the director of the documentary, they both kind of coached me through what I needed to do, and we did it in like 30 minutes, and it was done. It was pretty cool.
Oh, good. Glad you had a little bit of fun there. Now, there's one that you know that I know some of the people that worked on this movie, and it's a good movie, so I'm going to bring it up, Morbid Stories. So I want you to talk about
yeah.
that a little bit, because I know that you directed in that. So go ahead.
So I was approached. Now, this is a funny story, and I hope Phil Herman is listening, because God bless him, I love the guy.
Me too. I love you, Phil.
I don't know anybody who doesn't love him. He's always – like the thing I like – this is going to be a Phil Herman love party right now. The guy's been on – like. He has my back with everything I do, and I'm a little sniveling jerk sometimes. But he approached me when I was doing I don't know what I was doing, but he approached me and said, "Hey, look, I don't know who you are, but we're doing this anthology, and can you make a short film about vampires in a week?" And I was like, "No, and I have no interest in vampires." And he's like, "Well, do you want to do something else like zombies?" And you know, I was like, "Well, a week is not a very long time." So I signed on, and we agreed on a month, and I went over a month. It took me like a month and a half, and I made this segment about a creature in the attic. Now, the funny thing is, I made the same exact movie back when I was in high school, like 12 years ago, about there being this monster in the attic, and this guy has to deal with it. And I told Phil, like, I didn't know – this was a last minute thing, and they were trying to get the movie out by October. So this was August when he approached me. So I'm all excited, and you know, I'm ready to sculpt this creature and make this monster. And I had this script written, and I sent it to Phil, and Phil loved it. And Phil showed Asif, and you know, we were all excited. And as I was going on, it was just kind of like, I was busy trying to do pre-production, and there was no time. And I really wanted this really cool bat-like creature living in the attic. And unfortunately, because of the time that we had, I had to stop working on it. I have sketches of it still somewhere. And we had to literally make a cheap monster out of a Chewbacca costume and a cheap Halloween mask. And when the Chewbacca costume came, it was, I ordered one for an adult, one size fits all. They sent one for a child. So this thing barely fit me. It was riding all up into my nads and all that jazz. So that's why the creature's always hunched over, because the damn thing kept riding up and all this stuff. And if you sat up, you would rip it. And oh my God, it was terrible. Oh man. And like, cause you know, originally you saw my segment, right? I believe.
Yes. Yeah.
If you like the movie. Okay. The scene where I first meet the creature, originally I wanted that thing like hanging from like the attic ceiling, and my character walks underneath it, and this goo drips, and he shines the flashlight up, and you see these red eyes peering at him, and the thing kind of unravels these wings and comes down at him, and he falls backwards and falls through the floorboards and lands on his ankle, and that's how he breaks his ankle. Well, we didn't have the time to do any of that or the money. That's what I wanted to do. And Morbid Stories, I'm glad I did it, but it was definitely a rush job. It was kind of a pain to an extent. I'm happy that we did something, but I look at it and I'm like, God, I could do so much better. Just Phil, give me another month. And we couldn't do it because of distribution. They had to get it out. So, you know, who knows? Maybe Morbid Stories 2, if they – if they want me back and give me a decent budget, I can make something awesome.
Yeah, it sounds a good thing to me. I hope they do make a second one. And here's something that might make you feel better about the whole thing. about morbid stories. And I'm not just saying this because you're my guest, because you can ask Phil or anybody else. I don't tell people what I think they want to hear. I tell them the truth. I read comments.
Good.
I love to read people's comments. Well, except for the people that get nasty. But I've been reading about morbid stories, and more than half of the people, more than half, say that your segment is their favorite.
That's cool. I mean, I talked to a few of the reviewers who reviewed it, and I try to reach out to them just to let them know, like, hey, look, listen, if you didn't like mine, let me know what I could do better. And there was one guy who really did give me some good advice about writing. But again, it's like, you know, when you only have so much time to do this, and plus we had to deliver a 5.1 surround sound mix, which took
right.
up like 3 weeks of it. You know, that was a lot, and I had never done that before. Again, this project would not have been possible without Josh Lynch, without Ben Bostaff, without Caitlin Manning, without my crew. Josh Lynch, Adam Clifton did the music. Adam Clifton pulled out some amazing music. The only thing I did not really care for about the whole project was they re-edited the project after I sent it to them, and I understand what they were doing. Look, it happens in Hollywood movies. The only issue I had was they cut out – there was like an audio track that they cut out that had music and sound effects. There's one scene where it's missing some really good sound and pinnacle music that I thought was really good, and I felt bad because Adam Clifton, who – that dude really poured his heart and soul into this thing. Got shafted because of it. But all in all, I'm glad we did it. I had fun with it. You know, looking back at it now, I just know that if I had a little bit more time and a little bit of money, we could have done something really cool.
Well, yeah, like you say, that happens even in Hollywood. Sometimes they cut out the best scenes, and sometimes when they cut out these scenes, and then you and that's one thing that helps with the behind the scenes and the extra features that we were talking about previously. If you watch those and then you see some of the scenes they cut out, and when you see them put back in, it's like, well, now that scene makes sense. It didn't make any sense before. And that happens a lot. One that I like to use, just to name a really short one really quick, is Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. There's a part where Dr. McCoy, this boy dies, and Dr. McCoy pulls up this sheet over his face, and he says, "I'm sorry, Scotty." And that's the way it was released in the theater. Now, for years, people were like, why did he say, "I'm sorry, Scotty"? It's not like it was the first time he ever had somebody die that worked under him. So why did they do that? And so it wasn't until the director's edition came out with all the extra added features, and they had that scene, and the entire scene was that, the entire scene was is that Scotty was talking about the boy that had died, and he was the only son of his sister. So it was his nephew. That's why Dr. McCoy said, "I'm sorry, Scotty." But if you saw it in the theaters and before they had that put back in, you'd be like what I was. What did he say that for? It didn't make any sense whatsoever. So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, there were some scenes in Morbid Stories where we just cut it out of the script entirely because it was going to take too long or it was going to hold up a production. And you know, there was a couple of people who gave us crap because of there's a scene where I fall down the stairs. And again, like I said, in the original script, he fell from the floorboard. But we really had to improvise this thing just to get it done. There comes a point when you're making a movie where it's like you could be a perfectionist all you want, or you could just get the thing done and move on to the next project. And, you know, we just want at the halfway point, we were like, let's just get it finished and move on. We have a movie that's distributed. It's now online. And we all busted our butts on it, and it's okay for me. I'm proud of it. I just, like I said, you know, it could always be better, and that's just, I think that's a good thing though, because you know, I don't want to walk around like, you know, my shit don't stink. I'm the best filmmaker in the world. Yeah, I want to be, you know, very humble about it, because it's like, you know, there's other people that Phil could have chosen for this, and they settled on me. Somehow they found my stuff, and were like, this guy, you know. And I'm happy about that. It makes me proud. I mean, my work was decent, you know. And, you know, I had to prove to him, I showed him the stuff when I was trying to be Daredevil. I made some Daredevil stuff. And when I was trying to make the Friday the 13th reboot, I showed him my pitch for that and a trailer that I won an award for. You know, these are the things I showed him to try to get the gig. And he was like, okay, you know, I trust this guy. And he really did go to bat for me. I will say that. Like, you know, and I love Philadelphia. He was always buying me more time, saying, hey, you know, hold on, this guy's pretty good. Let's give him some stuff. And everybody else, I tell you, some of the other filmmakers did a really fantastic job. You know, I don't know. I can't speak for their sets. I wasn't there, but I watched the movie and there was only one segment that I really didn't understand. And I'm sure it was a thing where, again, it was probably rushed to get done because, you know, that's how everything works with film. You have to get it done. So I'm happy with it. But again, I just wish I could do better.
Yeah, well, actually, there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. And most filmmakers feel that way, even when it's a really, really good movie. My first guest was Manu Inti-Raymi. And I don't know if you know him, but he played Icheb on Star Trek Voyager. So this is a plug for you, Manu. And he did this film called Fifth Passenger. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to get in on your show, but I'm only bringing it up for one reason, is because he was talking about one small scene in the movie that the special effects didn't look as good as the rest of the movie. And so he was upset with that, but the rest of it looked good. So everybody has a little bit of something. And if you don't, if you think that your stuff is perfect, then there's something wrong with you, because nobody's stuff is perfect. I don't care who you are. Steven Spielberg doesn't make anything perfect. Neither does George Lucas or George Romero or anybody else. There's always something.
Right,
so
right. And as my friends tell me, like, I'm still in my infancy stage right now. I'm still learning and trying to find my voice and style, you know. Like, I've never had a lot of money to play with when I make a movie. I've always done it cheap. Like, even when I did The Writers, I did the special effects and shot part of that movie called The Writers. And we had no money, you know. We did what we could with what we had, and that's what it was, you know. So I'm hoping to one day be able to work with a budget and some decent actors. And, you know, everybody I've worked with has been great. But, you know, if I ever get a bigger project, I want to bring some of the people I've worked with, almost like Sandler does. But I'd like to work with some of the people that I've admired throughout the years. You know, I think that would be a pretty cool thing. And that's one of the reasons why I did my sort of this damn talk show.
Well, you know, I hope it helps you a little bit at least. But, yeah, I know I wouldn't say a lot. Well, actually, it is a lot. I know a lot of people in the business, plus I have family in the business. And I don't say that to brag. I only say that so that filmmakers know that I understand most of the stuff that they're talking about when they talk about how it's things are difficult, even though they look easy. Because like what one of my guests was talking about, just if you have somebody, two guys sitting out in a boat on the water, yeah, that looks simple to the person watching it, but that's really not simple to film. And I understand that.
That's a nightmare.
Yeah. And I'm the person, I'm the type of person, because I am a almost professional reviewer. I occasionally get, not necessarily paid, but I get a little gift bags and stuff for my reviews, that it's just one of those things that when I give my review, even if I don't really like the movie, because I won't lie, I'm not going to lie for you. If I don't like your movie, I'm not going to tell you I like it. However, I can still pick out things about your movie that I like. There was only one movie that I've ever watched, and I won't mention a person's name, obviously, but it was the only time that I was lost as to what good could I say about this. The thing was terrible. It made no sense. And it wasn't because it was in French, because I actually speak French. So I didn't even need the dubbing or, the closed captioning or any of that, because I speak French. So it wasn't that I didn't understand the French. I understood that. It's, the story didn't make any sense. And it was like, oh, it was terrible. The acting was terrible. But I finally thought, oh, what am I going to say? Because he wanted me to give him a review. And I said, well, you know what? And I was being totally honest. I said, this has the best visual effects I have ever seen in a movie. And I actually was telling the truth. Because there's like a couple of scenes where this guy's having this, like he's on an acid trip. And the visual effects for it were, like I said, the best I had ever seen in a movie. And I've seen lots and lots and lots of movies. And so I told him that, and hoping that he wouldn't ask anything else. And he didn't. He just said, oh, thank you so much. And then he never asked me anything else. And I was like, whew. Boy, I really made it through that one because I was afraid he was going to ask me what else I liked about it, and there really wasn't anything else. But that was the only time that I couldn't find like several things that I liked, whether it be the acting, the directing, or whatever. And the effort, like with Morbid Stories, not to keep talking about it, but you can tell by the effort. You put effort into that, and it people can tell by watching it that there was a lot of effort put into it. So sorry to take time away from you talking. I didn't do that intentionally. If we're done with that, let's talk about a little bit about this thing, because I don't know that much about it. Captain Happy Son, what is that?
Captain Happy Son is an amazing movie directed by Aaron Moore, a kid I went to film school with. I had a couple small roles in it. I played like two or three guys maybe. And it's hard to explain, but it is one of the best comedy films to come out of independent cinema in the past 20 years. It's just funny. It's on Amazon Prime right now. It's streaming for free, I think. Him and Dorian Clevenger worked really hard on it. This was Aaron's film school project. He made a feature film. I commend him. He did it with no money. He did almost all of it by himself. He wore a lot of hats, just like I did on Macabre Medicine. Definitely worth checking out. I don't want to say too much about it because I don't want to ruin it, but it's a lot like A Christmas Carol. It's about a guy, you know, going on this adventure and learning, how to live life pretty much. You know, he's an uptight guy and he's learning how to loosen up from these crazy characters. Oh man, it's funny. I can't stress enough how funny it is. And I wish I had a bigger role on it, but I'm happy with the two or three small things I did. Because man, God, it was one of those things where it started out small, I'm sure, and then everybody in the film school started got like, oh God, we got to help out and do something. And man, there's so many great, talented people who brought some things to the table and really helped out. It was awesome.
Oh, good. Sounds like one that I want to see. Sounds interesting. One that I really wanted to ask about, because I wanted to hold it till close to the end, just in case that you wanted to talk about it for a while, because I don't know how big your part is or anything, and you may even have it continued or something, because it's still in, they're still working on it. Joel D. Weinkoop's The Kreglin Incident, and that all came about because of the COVID-19. And so all of these segments are being done with people. They're shooting them from like 20 feet away, or they're like not literally phoning it in, but they're phoning it in. And just so I want you to explain what part you had in it and how much fun you had, or if you still are working on it.
I think I've wrapped my part. I think I'm done with it. It's just a small part. It's just a cameo bit. I play a T-shirt salesman who sells Phil Herman's character, or trying to sell him a Joel D. Weinkoop King of the B Movies T-shirt. And it gets ridiculous. It's a good comedic scene. I just kind of ramble off. I did some ad libbing. Joel was a pleasure to work with. The thing about him, he knows what he wants. He likes that. He has a vision in mind, and I think we did pretty good because he was very collaborative with it. Like, I would bring up a couple things. He'd be like, yeah, do that, you know. And it was just a lot of fun because it was kind of hard. I live in Delaware. He lives in Florida. We were both kind of doing it at the same time, you know. I would shoot it overnight, and I'd send it to him, and then he'd be like, hey, could you add this to this or do this? I'd be like, yeah, sure. So I'd shoot it again, and you know, I'm curious to see how it turns out. You know, it was a pleasure to work with Phil in a scene together, even though we didn't really work in a scene together. It'll be cool to see that. And it was also a pleasure working with Joel. Joel's a cool guy, and he's king of the B-movies, you know?
He is. He and his wife, and they are such a cute couple. And one thing I wanted to mention to you, since you brought up, you know, liking working with him and everything, did you happen to listen to his or Kathy's show yet? I know you may not have had the time yet, but have you listened to them yet?
I have not. I've been busy building a wall around my studio.
Well, like I said, I know that you have things to do. That's why I said yet. But, of course, Joel, he mentioned you. But when I had Kathy on, she said quite a few nice things about you, really big kudos. And then I could hear him in the background. So they were both talking about how great they thought that just that small part was. So when you get to hear the show, you might want to make sure that you listen in for that, because they definitely talk about you. And I thought that was just so sweet that they went on, maybe not on and on and on and on for a long time, but they did go on for like a couple of minutes about how great you were. So there you go. If they think you're great, then you're doing something right.
You know, I am my own worst critic. I always tear myself up, and Phil is a guy who's been kind of trying to help me with that, because I always think I could do better. And I'm a big fan of self-deprecating humor. I do it on my talk show. I think it's fun, but sometimes I let it get into my personal life. And a lot of people have been telling me, like, when I wanted to be an actor, I will be the first to admit this, I was the most overacting, terrible actor ever. And Ben Bostaff can back me up. And I got better over the years. I think I kind of age like a fine wine or milk, whatever you guys want to, whatever your opinion is of me. But, you know, a lot of people have been coming to me recently, especially after Morbid Stories. They were like, you know, your performance in that movie was so good. You know, we'd like you to be in this movie. And I want to do a lot more acting. I love acting. And if people want to hire me, hint, hint, wink, wink, throw me a bone. I'd love to do some parts, you know. A lot of people have been telling me, even like, you know, Phil said that Joel really liked my role and how I portrayed the character. And there was really not much to it, to be honest. I was just kind of being myself. But all I can say to these people is, gee shucks, thank you.
Well, let me put it this way. When they were talking about it, it made me think to myself, hey, you know what? I want to see this movie anyway, but now I want to see it because I want to see that part. Because they were talking about how you just went through this whole big long thing and you made it your own, and they just thought that it was so great. And I thought, wow, because coming from them, you know, not that they don't say nice things about people, because they do, but meaning because they're, you know, the king and queen basically of B movies, and if they're saying good stuff about you, then yeah, you've got something going on then.
Well, that's you know, I'm not saying I'm the best of the best, but, you know, if that's what people think and I'm rising to the top, that's great. You know, I would love to do more. You know, right now I'm just a guy who's trying to run a small talk show out of his living room.
Well, since you brought that up, why don't you go ahead and talk about it for anybody that may not have heard about it? What's the name of it? When do you have the show, et cetera, et cetera? So go ahead.
So I've been a bad boy recently. I haven't done a show in about 2 weeks, and the reason is because we're building this wall that I'm doing out of my house. Me and my friends, I came up with this idea, and a lot of them have been so kind and gracious to give me their time and help me write the jokes. But I'm doing a talk show. It's an online talk show called Movie Night with Willa Bockins. Now, the reason why it's Movie Night with Willa Bockins, it's not because I'm an egotistical prick, because I am, but it's because I think Movie Night, there's already a copyright or whatever on it, and I don't want to get any legal issues, so we have to put my name at the end of it. It's almost like Daily Show with Jon Stewart, and that's what it is. I'm trying to make the Daily Show, but it's all entertainment news. It's a lot of fun, and it's my chance to interview people that I respect, people that I like, as well as these up-and-coming artists who a lot of people haven't heard from, and You know, it's we do movie news where I crack a few jokes. I sometimes interview people. I review a product. We have gags, these characters that come on, like the ghost of Orson Welles and the creepy usher and all this other stuff. And it's a lot of fun to do, but it's a lot of work for me and just the few people that are working on it. And the people who are working on it are the people who have worked with me for close to 15 years now. But it's a lot of fun. And it's on YouTube. We try to release a new episode every Monday. Once we get this wall up and it's, you know, soundproof, pretty much what happened was I was shooting in my living room, in the back of my living room, and you can hear everything throughout the house. So if my dog is walking up and down the hallway, you can hear that on the microphones. If my nephew's running around doing his Naruto run, you can hear him. You know, if the cat's yowling because of, you know, he doesn't like me doing the show, you can hear that. So we're trying to get it so you don't hear any of that stuff, and it's pretty soundproof now. And my uncle Steve Harding, he's a master carpenter, helped me build this because I am terrible at this stuff. If it wasn't for him, it wouldn't be up. You know, he really helped me do it, so it's pretty nice and it really helps the show. But it's a fun show. We're trying to build the base. I've never done this before. I always grew up, you know, this is something a lot of people don't know about me. I grew up watching a lot of late night. You know, my grandmother would always leave Letterman on when I was a kid because she loved CBS. And when she passed out, I'd always see it on the TV on occasion. And, you know, I would see Craig Kilborn doing the Late Late Show or Tom Snyder or something like that, maybe, you know, when I was staying up late. But I always kind of wanted to do this, and I never thought I would be any good. And finally, you know, I came up with this idea in film school, and because of COVID-19, I just decided, hey, the hell with it. Let's just do it. So we did it, and it's cheap. It's independent, but it's coming along, and I'm hoping to make it better. And, you know, we're doing things that are for the artist. I give away items. I have people who want me to test their products, and I always tell them, hey, I will write you a decent review if you give me the product, and then you give me another product to give away, because there's a lot of people out there who want to do this who don't know where to start. They don't know where to start, and they don't know how to how much the gear costs. And that's what I want to do. I want to kind of inform, and we do it in a goofy way. And of course, you know, it's the internet. There's a lot of misinformation out there. So yeah, my facts might be wrong on occasion because, you know, I don't have direct access, believe it or not. I don't have direct access to Robert Pattinson. So I can't really tell him the audience what he's eating for breakfast, but we try to keep it. We try to keep away from rumors. We try to, you know, tell it as it is. There was one girl that kind of got on me because I was talking to somebody about Watchmen, the HBO series, how they were going to do a season two. And the girl was like, no, he had never had an idea, never had a reason to do a season two. I'm like, well, yes, they did. It's HBO. If a show is successful, they're going to pretty much ride that into the ground, you know? But yeah, this is. I'm hoping to make this a full-time gig. I want to be a talk show host, and I want to interview people and see what they're doing. It's a lot of fun. It really is.
Well, good. I'm glad that you're doing something you have a lot of fun doing. Now, see me again. Not to detract back to me. I am really sorry about that. But really, I'm just doing these shows to more or less help my friends to get them out there so that people know the stuff that they're doing.
Well,
so
you know,
really,
and that's kind of what I want to do too. It's the same thing. It's just like, I think like it's a way to give back. It's a way to entertain, to inform. And, you know, it's a lot of people are like, oh, you're just doing it to be famous. I'm like, nah, man, I'm not going to be famous with the 300 people per episode review. And I'm thankful for those 300. Let me say that. But I'm also thankful for the crew. You know, we have a decent writing staff that I don't pay them. I don't have the money to pay them. We were doing this thing called the writer's room, and it just wasn't working out because, like, you know, it's Facebook Messenger, and everybody would join. It's like we would do a FaceTime call, and everybody would be, like, you know, talking and trying to get their jokes in, and I couldn't understand it because I'm ADHD and I'm, you know, always bouncing around. So I disbanded that room. I didn't tell them, though. I apologize for those who are listening, but I'm trying to find a better way to do the writer's room right now. But like Mike Doyle and Lewis Schwartz, Jim Andrews, Sean Anderson, I have to plug these guys' name. Matt Sigler, Albie Robles does our VOs, you know. Adam Clifton comes here and helps us shoot it, and so does Josh Lynch sometimes, you know. Ben Bostaff helps edit it. Like, these are the people who make the show possible, and they do a great job. I'm just the face. I'm just the guy that sits behind the desk and looks like a jackass half the time. I do some of the work. I do write and edit, but it's these guys. These are the guys who do it. And, like, you know, they're all very talented, smart people. Like, some of the stuff that, like, Sean does, he's an animator. He does a lot of great art. You know, it's awesome. And the stuff that Matt writes and Mike and Jim and Lewis, and they're just brilliant writers. They come up with jokes up the top of their head that take me 2 days to create. You know, and, you know, like, Mike Doyle has his own show, The Movie Raid, which is amazing. You should interview him. He does his own little show, similar to what you do. It's a radio podcast type of thing. It's really cool. And, you know, Adam Clifton does the music for the show. Albie is a VO guy. If you ever need a VO, that guy is awesome. He's very affordable. He's smart. He's talented. I can't say enough great things about these people, because they've come together to make this show happen. And I'm just a guy with a dream. I have a dream to do this. And if we ever get big and the show takes off and we get a gig doing it on ABC or CBS, I want to bring these guys with me. I want to bring them with me, and I want to work with these guys and, you know, make it the best we could possibly make. That's all we want to do, is make the best show possible.
Because
it's all about the creativity, and it's all about the people watching it, and it's all about the filmmakers. It's all about the art. And not even just filmmakers. It's musicians. It's artists. It's animators. It's even people who haven't done anything. Like, we just want to interview whoever has an interest, and hopefully you'll learn something from it. And if you don't, you know, hopefully you'll laugh at it. And if you don't, well, I apologize for wasting your time.
Oh, I doubt that it would be a waste of time. So we've got, like, just over 3 minutes. So if you would want to tell people how they can get a hold of you, like, if they just want to send you a note about if they think you're a good actor, or if they want to offer you a job or whatever, let people know how they can get a hold of you.
You can contact me on my website. It's worldofokes.com, devokes.com, or you can send me an email, devokes@gmail.com, devokes. At Gmail, or you can like the Movie Night page or add me on Facebook, follow me on Instagram. It's just Devokes, again, for the folks in back, DevOkes. look me up, you know, add the Movie Night page, you know, on Facebook. It's Movie Night with Will Devokes. Just search it. You'll see a picture of me cheesing, looking all weird. And that's about it.
Okay. Now we've got just over 2 minutes. So since there's still a little bit of time, hopefully we won't get cut off. That's what happened the last show. But if there's anything you want to say in closing, doesn't matter what it is, as long as it's, you know, PG-13, anything you want to say about anybody that you think you may have missed or something you've got coming up, anything in the last 2 minutes, go.
I just want to say I want to thank everybody who's supported me over the years. Everybody who thought I was kind of a dreamer and, you know, supported me, thank you very much. I want to thank everybody who's working with me right now. I want to thank everybody who's watching me. I want to thank Craig Kilborn for the kind, small words he's helped me throughout the show. I want to thank David Letterman for the inspiration. And I want to thank everybody. And here's the thing. I think everybody, if you get depressed, keep pushing, keep moving, make the best art you can and show it to me. Make everything that you've wanted to do. Make it happen now, because you're not going to have it later. Do it today, not tomorrow, and show it to me, because I want to see it and I want to enjoy it, because you might make the best music or the best movie. That might be my favorite movie someday. So don't wait. Do it now.
Good advice.
Love you guys.
Okay. Yeah, we're just in the last minute. So I'm just going to say to you, thank you very much. Thank you very much for being on the show. I enjoyed having you, and I hope that it was a good experience for you.
Yes, it was lovely. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, thank you, Will, and hopefully you get to be on the show again. And I'm going to go ahead and hang up the call, and thank you again, and have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.